Hi, everyone. Before we start the episode, we wanted to make a special announcement that we will be having our first official launch as a creative community at the Vancouver UX Awards. You can check them out online at vancouveruxawards.com and come check our booth. We are the community sponsors, so we have a lot of exciting initiatives like a mentorship program, job board, Discord community, and we have some upcoming live events partnering with some local and international design communities. So come say hi, and we look forward to meeting you.
You know, there were some good times, there were some bad times, there were some stressful times, there was some sad times. Agnes definitely knows, you know, the odd time that I would call her just like super worried about a student, be like, hey, what do I do? Like, I can't not do something. Like, I gotta talk to someone else about this. And that just comes with the territory when you know have so much passion for education, but also, you know, your own student.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our mini series here at the Collab Collective podcast called Aftermath Life After Red, where we catch up with former staff and students and follow up on their story since their time at Red Academy. I'm your host, Josh, and today we have Agnes Zhang, the former VP of HR, returning to the pod as my co-host to interview the talented Leo Caligaro. Leo was the UI UX instructor at Red Academy's Toronto location, and in this episode, we talk about his journey from being a secondary school teacher in London to a multidisciplinary designer armed with some coding skills on the side. Leo also shares about the close connections he's made with the students as he summarized it in a 5-part article on Medium. Please enjoy this episode in the aftermath.
Well, I'm Leo. Thanks again for having me. I was looking really forward to kind of sharing my Red story. So currently, I'm actually a UX designer for Blue Cross Medivie. So super Canadian company, little corporate, trying to get used to a big contrast from Red. So it's funny, I went from like red to blue. They're very blue. But so far so good. It's only been a couple of weeks, but I definitely can't complain. Over at Red, I was the UI UX instructor on the UI UX design team. So primarily on the UI, teaching the full-time UI program. But because they were so cross-collaborative, we were obviously, you know, between rooms, teaching a little bit of the UX. Also helping out with the community partner program. For anyone just listening and just hearing about that, it's just a really awesome program where we took, you know, real life ideas from the community and took them from napkin sketch to a fully fledged website or prototype or app or whatever it may be. And and now I'm here today talking to some alumni as well as the awesome person who hired me.
Oh,
thank you.
Awesome. Could you guys share the story of how you guys met and when you first got started, Leo?
Yeah, I'll leave that to Agnes to start.
Yeah, sure.
I think she found me and couldn't get enough.
Yes. So hi, Josh. Thanks for having me back. So for those who did not listen to the first aftermath, my name is Agnes. I was the ex-VP of talent, or basically HR at Red Academy. And I was the first guest to Aftermath and now a co-host. But in terms of Leo and I, with me being based in Toronto for when I was at Red Academy, I guess was a little bit more involved in the hiring process of the instructors in Toronto. And essentially we had a vacancy. We needed someone to formally lead the UI program and put out a call. Very standard recruitment practice, to be honest. Like we obviously didn't need a new job description. We just put out the former or older job description, just knowing that all the specs were the same, and just saw the various applicants trickle in. And truth be told, there wasn't some like glamour story in terms of like, I saw Leo's name. I'm like, oh my God, he's the one. I clicked onto Leo and I think one thing for me, not to make this about me, but the one thing in terms of how I recruit is that if there's every available field within an application that was made available to the applicants and they took the time to fill everything out and within detail, and that there was a LinkedIn URL field and they just filled it out because it was part of it, it wasn't even mandatory. I tend to take a look at those applications a little bit harder because it meant that the applicant took more time. And I came across Leo's and it was all fully filled out with some really, really in-depth like pre-screen answers to the pre-screen questions. And what made me as a hiring manager very interested in Leo and for if this is still up, Leo, you can confirm for me, but Leo had a really cool website that basically, you know, it was a digital resume of his. And Leo, I won't go into your background because you can share a little bit more about yourself, but I was just really impressed with everything that was put together. And I knew that from the external point of view perspective was, hey, if this is a guy that was going to take his time to do this for himself, then he's surely going to be looking after the students as well. So contacted you, went through the process. It was a pretty easy decision, to be honest with you, in terms of hiring you. And lucky for us, you were interested in us. And so you joined.
Yeah, it was a pretty easy welcome. Luckily, it was also around the corner from my condo and it took a nice little walk over and was just happily like reading by the door.
Oh, so good.
This nice little warm environment. But what Agnes is actually referring to is the really, really fun cursor on my website, which anyone is welcome to play with. It's just myname.com. Maybe
I'm taking a look at it right now.
Yeah, it's throw so that one cool. in the description. Yeah, I get a lot of mixed feedback about that. I actually have some people that are just like, I've just been playing on your website for the last 5 minutes. And then I have others to be like, I don't get it. And I was like, if you don't get it, I probably don't want to work there anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, eventually got into Red, met Agnes, and just instantly like loved the vibe, loved the warm atmosphere, loved the way that, you know, we treated our students and just kind of that relaxed, almost agency-like environment. You know, students, you know, nestled in the couches and others just working in the kitchen, a couple playing foosball and a couple, you know, working outside. It was just something that was a little new for me. So for a little bit of background, I actually come from a little bit of a mixed, multidisciplinary kind of, you know, professional background, but primarily teaching. And he was a little bit scared about teaching again. To give some context, I was actually teaching high school prior to doing, you know, design formally, at least professionally. And I've always been, you know, doing design, I want to say, since like CS maybe 2 days, or like still have a Photoshop floppy disk somewhere in one of my old computers, for example. But prior to that, I was doing just some more traditional teaching actually over in the UK. And oh, when cool. I came back to Toronto, I just I didn't want to settle for just like the traditional kind of teaching world. So I actually enrolled myself in a front-end dev boot camp because I really wanted to just level up as a designer. But my goal wasn't to get into dev. It wasn't necessarily to go back into full-time design. It was really to just have some more well-rounded skills. Hmm. And with, you know, the whole shift, everything going digital, it just felt like something that made sense to me at the time. So it wasn't until I actually, you know, got a couple of years under my belt at a few different agencies, as well as doing a ton of different freelance and stuff experience, is where I really like paired my teaching experience and my design experience and my development experience all together at what was Red, which was really the kind of perfect mix of everything I've done before, as well as everything I kind of wanted to do. So embarking on the, you know, teaching the next generation of designers was something that was very interesting to me, as well as like very rewarding, but also just to like foster those awesome relationships with students and like-minded staff is always, like, you know, a huge plus to wanting to come into the office every day. And it also helped that, you know, we had kind of two offices to pick from over in Toronto, which is really nice. We had our like kind of staff hideout around the corner on King Street and then the Red School over on Wellington, which is really fun. So a lot of cross collaboration in between, a lot of meets in the park and a lot of lunch all around.
All up and down King Street and Wellington.
Oh, so there were two separate buildings.
Yeah, because during the last year, I guess, we essentially had the full extent of all the programs that took up all the rooms that we basically kicked ourselves out. So there was no longer a staff room. Mm-hmm. And when it came to, I guess, like the quote unquote HQ staff at Red, there was probably a good handful of Toronto staff members that weren't instructors. And so there was no place to have like a confidential phone call. There was no place for like the marketing team to like sit down together and talk about marketing initiatives and campaigns. And also we had, you know, the head of sales, we had our CEO now, or former CEO, Roy. You know, there weren't any space to have those type of meetings as well. So there was a decision made to essentially, I mean, we almost, not to name drop, but it's like we almost went to WeWork because there was plenty of them in Toronto. But there ended up being a closer co-working space that was independently owned, right? Like literally 2 minutes away from Red. The Toronto team had kind of two locations to be able to go to.
That's cool. So, Leo, if you were to sum up your experience at Red, let's say if you had three words to describe and sum up your experience, what would they be? And we can dive into it later on.
Oh, that's a tough one. let me dive into that one. Oh wow, you're really putting me on the spot with that one.
I don't. You didn't even ask me that question, Josh.
Yeah, that was something me and Haiti kind of discussed. You don't have to answer it; it's fine. But
It's coming to me. I'm just trying to. I'm trying not to be redundant, and I want to try to sum up, you know, the whole experience from start to finish. But you know, it was a warm red embrace.
Nice.
I feel like I got a little bit of everything. You know, it was warm. It was very red. And you know, we were embraced with a little bit of everything. And I don't want to go into all the details, but you know, there were some good times. There was some bad times. There was some stressful times. There was some sad times. Agnes definitely knows. You know, the odd time that I would call her, just like super worried about a student, be like, "Hey, what do I do? Like, I can't not do something. Like, I gotta talk to someone else about this." And that just comes with the territory when you know have so much passion for education, but also you know your own students, you can't not worry about them. I've had students that are 10 years older than me and like 10 years my senior, and I honestly treat them all the same. Like they really do become family, and I get to keep up with a lot of them, which is amazing. Get to hear what they're doing. They teach me a ton of things as well, so it's a really invaluable experience for sure. So yeah, definitely warm, definitely red, and you know, we really did embrace it all over there.
So this is a really nice segue for me in terms of where I wanted to take this interview with Leo. Is Leo, I really wanted to reach out to you and interview you for this podcast, because in terms of what this podcast really means in terms of aftermath, like life after Red, you have really been the only ex-Red employee to do your own summing up of your experience. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can drop the links to your Medium account, but you had on your own, external to this podcast, started your own recap. And so I'd love to know the thought behind that in terms of, you know, the who, what, when, where, why. Why did you decide to do like a 4-part series on your experience?
Yeah, great question. And I'm happy to share that. Hopefully we can even maybe throw that in the description. I'd love to just get more eyes on it, because, you know, my real reason was I didn't want to be forgotten. And our students just worked way too hard, you know, way too many sleepless nights, super late nights at Red, super early mornings, way too much work and community involvement that I just wasn't ready to kind of throw it away. And I wasn't ready for it to be lost in, you know, the interwebs. One of my like late projects at Red that unfortunately never went into fruition was some sort of like student archive and just like an amazing roster, something that we actually talked about with our marketing team. And it was something I did not have the capacity or time for, but I thought it was absolutely necessary. And I was willing to, you know, put in the extra hours to just get it done because, you know, our students really deserved it. So around, you know, shortly after kind of things started to shut down in Toronto, and, you know, kind of forced to be home and shelter in place, I you know, I'm definitely no writer. I never have been. I always, you know, appreciated small like copywriting and advertising and things like that, but definitely no journalist per se. But I really wanted to just share my story, and I really wanted to focus on the positives, and I really wanted to focus on the students. So for me, I really wanted to just capture that experience from start to finish. I wanted to talk about almost every project that we worked on, every community partner that we worked on, every little small business that we helped, every you know, entrepreneur that we took from, you know, that little napkin sketch to you know, bringing in revenue or bringing in income. It was just, you know, these tiny little wins that really get summed up and add up into something bigger. And I think that's what Red was, and I think that's what really made Red stand out from the other, you know, competition. There's tons of great schools, especially here in Toronto. It's very competitive, but you know, the reason why I think you know, with Red kind of phased out or fizzled out is because we needed those in-person experiences. That is what made Red. And you know, we weren't necessarily equipped to just shut things down and go remote, and it made sense because our model was just so rooted in that agency real life experience, things that are so valuable for our students that I can confidently say they likely wouldn't have gotten elsewhere. So for me, I just wanted to capture that experience as detailed as I possibly could have, to really just give my students a voice, and just really for me to tell them that their work isn't forgotten, and mm-hmm. they really think about it all the time, and I think about them. So it was just a great, really small thing that I could do to share it. And I think I got a really, really great you know, feedback from it, as well as a lot of great opportunities, especially with the community partners that we worked with, to you know, make sure that they know who worked on their website or their product or their app or whatever it may be, and how much really went into it.
No, that's great. It really, I think that obviously we didn't really chat too much beforehand, and so I kind of found out with the rest of the people when you hit publish. But I think it was such a nice way to look back onto your year at Red, and from a hiring manager perspective, it was to look at like the legacy that you left behind too. So totally tooting your horn here, but it was something that I thoroughly enjoyed reading. And I loved how you broke it down like quarter by quarter too, which was a very seamless transition.
It definitely wasn't easy, and it took a lot to actually track it all down, but I wanted to keep it, you know, bite-sized and very snackable content. You know, I wanted someone to just like pop in and, you know, if they only read like a paragraph or two, they'd still kind of get the picture. But, you know, I really dedicated each article, and there was a 5-part series to basically each group of the students that I worked with. Mm-hmm. And I know I didn't get the chance to talk about all the amazing staff and all the amazing other departments that we got to work with, you know, the devs or the marketers. And I would love to keep that story going, but I felt I had to do something for my students to just keep it going. And it was really like the small thing that I could do that I know would have an impact for them. And, you know, something small that they could share, something small that they could kind of look back on. And the reason why I just summed it up in that way was for them to just kind of look up, this is exactly what I was doing in, you know, Q3 of 2019, especially when everybody had some ample time to read them all, since, you know, everyone was kind of sheltering in place at home.
And so formally speaking, you're one of our instructors at Red. I'd like to cornerly ask you, what's something that you learned from teaching at Red?
I learned to be flexible. And I think coming from my more traditional experience, you know, I'm obviously, you know, going to be flexible with my students in terms of, you know, coming in late, for example, or them, you know, not finishing an assignment, just, you know, it's kind of standard teaching world. But I learned that everyone comes from just so many walks of life, so many paths, and so much experience that, you know, I would modify assignments to suit a certain student's needs. And I think Red had that really great opportunity to do that. Because, you know, we had small class sizes. I really got to know my students. And oftentimes I would, you know, look at the curriculum and be like, great, this is an awesome reference for me, but I'm going to scrap 95% of this. I just want you to focus on what you like and what you, you know, what you want to learn and bring it into these, you know, small guidelines and produce what you think is appropriate. And especially from the design perspective, I think it really challenges, you know, some of the design thinking mindset. So it's just one of the great opportunities you get working for a small, you know, private career college. We were able to do those things. We were able to pivot really quickly. We were able to change assignments as long as we were, you know, making, getting to that bigger picture at the end. And I think just being flexible really got me to that point and got me to just reflect on, you know, the experience as a whole.
Yeah, like coming from like an actual teaching background with experience, you know, overseas, how did you find that structure at Red? Because, you know, they were really all about redefining the education, right? So like that customized modular freedom to change the lessons to fit every student, was that what made it really unique and made it more valuable than like a traditional teaching experience?
Absolutely. And I think that's what kept me there so long and kept me there kind of right till the end. It was being able to, you know, change the curriculum nearly every cohort or even between assignments. It was, you know, not having those mandates kind of shoved down your throat, like, oh no, you need to teach this and this and this. And, you know, it's not possible with these tech schools. Things are changing so fast. It's kind of up to me,
right?
Or I would be doing a disservice to my students if I wasn't at least exposing them to some of the latest and greatest things, even though they might not necessarily be using them in the workplace yet. It's a reason why I think a lot of my students personally were able to even just expand their knowledge and, you know, teach their colleagues something, or you know, be that advocate for accessibility, for example, in their wherever they kind of end up, because those are the things that I would bring to the table. And, you know, a lot of it was personal experiences, a lot of things I was just personally passionate about. But all in all, having that freedom and having that flexibility that Red allowed me to have just led for, I mean, I hate to say a better product, but at the end of the day, that's kind of what I was selling. I was selling myself. Come into my course and I will take you under my wing. I promise you won't be left hanging. And that's kind of another reason why I even wrote those articles, just make sure my students knew that, you know, I was always there. Reach out to me if you need some feedback, reach out to me if you need some help, or just reach out to me and let me know what you're doing now.
I think you mentioned a really good point from, I don't think I've ever publicly said this, but I think in terms of a private career college, such as Red, such as our size and our capacity, our product wasn't exactly the curriculum. Our product was our instructor's knowledge and that experience that a student would be able to really, using your word, embrace. You know, on my side, I've often really fought for the instructors, because without instructors, we didn't have anyone to carry through on what we were promising to our clients, our students, our customers, essentially. I still remember Leo, we had a really in-depth discussion about accessibility, and that we weren't paying a lot of attention to accessibility, but it was something that was important for us to actually, I don't know, either put on Red's own website or to teach for it, and or just everything when it came down to, because there was a small little like stairway hallway within the Red school. It was like, well, this isn't accessible because we don't have like a wheelchair ramp. I remember we had a really good conversation about all the things that we weren't doing around accessibility.
Yeah, and part of it is just like education, really, like educating our students, you know, this exists, you need to learn about it, this is why you need to learn about it. I know we have some different laws over here in Ontario than over in BC, but accessibility is just huge, and the more our students knew about it, the better. Led for you know, better products, it led for just better, more understanding and compassionate designers, at least coming out of my program. And I think because we had that opportunity to be flexible and pivot and just add things kind of right into the curriculum whenever we wanted, especially if there are things that I was personally really, really passionate about, you know, it just led to just a better experience for everyone.
Mm-hmm. What's something that you wish you could have done to look back on?
Great question. I mean, I did break a lot of rules there. So I'd like to say that anything I'd wanted to do, I did. So for example, I kind of argued with the, I won't name drop, but, you know, someone that I kind of replaced in the program taking over the UI class of, you know, the students need to learn this and the students need to learn this. And there's a little bit of friction, but I brought it in anyway, for example. So some things that I would love to add more of, I think just on a really, really technical note, is copywriting. I think it sounds a little maybe redundant because, you know, we're not necessarily training writers, but I think it's just like the missing puzzle that Red never had. Mm-hmm. Actually something that I talked about with another great instructor, George Wu, about having like a small, like either, you know, workshop or, you know, another program, because we did treat the place like a little agency. It was like that one little thing that we were missing. You know, we did do a lot of UX writing and a little bit, you know, things that are a little bit more tangible on the marketing side, for example, but having that dedicated copywriting course, I think was just something one, Toronto was missing, and two, it was like that little missing piece of the puzzle. So I actually brought in Q2 of 2019, one of my great friends from Ben Simon Burns, which is a really great copywriting firm or advertising firm over here in Toronto, to just give a little lesson on what copywriting is and what it looks like. And that was just something I was passionate about, something that I thought was missing from the program. And because of that flexibility, I was able to just, you know, not even ask and just like call a friend over and be like, hey, come talk to my students. They need to know this.
Yeah, I didn't know you did that. I would have sat in, just listened and learned myself.
Would copywriting fall in the intersection of design and marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think... you know, there's many ways to look at it in terms of what program it could belong to. But I think the approach we were going for, especially at the end of the, you know, kind of near the end of Red, was just a little bit more of synchronization between programs. So I think that's something that could be a perfect example of like a cross-department subject that, you know, both students, both groups of students should be learning or could be learning. But I think you're right, it could fall under both. But I think it's just something that they need to be aware of, especially in the design side and, you know, on the marketing side, maybe for more technical implications like SEO optimization, for example.
Right, right. Okay, so I do want to take this moment and pivot into, I guess, when things kind of happened, and just wanted to get your experience on like how you transitioned. Like, how did you take the news? Obviously, you don't need to dive into all the sad news if you don't want to, but like how did you pivot, how did you recover, and like how long did that take to kind of like get settled from all the shock?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I am definitely a bit of a pessimist sometimes, so you know, it wasn't easy, especially when, you know, the great city that I love was just like suddenly slowly very quiet. And then, you know, just came to a full stop where, you know, walking down King Street was a ghost town, which is just weird. And it was odd. And it was obviously nothing we've never seen before. But I was lucky enough to be, you know, to be, you know, financially, you know, more or less okay. Obviously having that paycheck come in is great, but it was okay to kind of just hang out and wait things out if I needed to. It was weird at first, that's for sure. You know, when things started happening right in the beginning, I gave my students a little bit of a heads up and be like, not sure if I'm able to even get back in the building. Seems like a really good time to work on your portfolio. you know, full force if you can. You know, take things easy. I know a lot of you are coming from far, commuting, whatever it may be. You know, I'll give you as much info as I can, as soon as I can. So it definitely wasn't easy. It was kind of scary for everyone, you know, just keeping up with the news and things like that. But, you know, for me personally, I've always been a resilient person. I've always, you know, a big fan of the side hustle, and I always have something else going on. So for me, at first, I took it as a little bit of a break and a little bit of an opportunity to kind of just regroup and rethink, and, you know, obviously be a little bit depressed about, you know, where things were going and what happened with kind of the school that I loved. And, it was just the perfect intersection for me at the time. So it was hard to let go. But I think that's another reason why I kind of wrote out my feelings, but, you know, kept the positives out there.
Yeah.
I could have definitely focused on, you know, some of the, you know, less great things that happened, or some of the, you know, the slow demise, for example, but I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted to just talk about the positives, and I wanted to talk about the great work that my students produce, because regardless of the direction Red went, that wasn't going to change. And for me, I just wanted to keep it out there. So I was lucky enough to, you know, be able to just kind of take that time to at least start writing that series. You know, at first I went really slow, and I actually had like a plan to release it in September, because I just wanted everyone to have that back to school kind of mindset. So it was a small thing that I worked on from basically all of kind of quarantine while I was still back on the job hunt, which, you know, for a lot of people wasn't too fun, but lucky enough, I've always, like I said, done a lot of side hustles, kind of kept them in my back pocket. I've always been a freelancer, and I've always picked up a few odd jobs here and there. So for me, I definitely took advantage of having that time off, but also wanted to, you know, not lose that just over a year of experience and be able to tell my story at the same time. So I'd like to say I was pretty productive over the time, which was great. A lot of good food and a lot of cooking. So I definitely kept busy. But I wanted to also, you know, make sure things weren't missed, because it was a big part of my life.
Right.
And it was definitely something I didn't want to forget, even for myself. So something I even shared with my family, who, you know, I still have to explain to my mom what I do. And that was just a really good way for her to kind of visualize things.
That's funny. Would you seek out other teaching opportunities now or in the future?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't take it away from myself. I love teaching. I love just kind of inspiring the next generation. I learn a lot from my students. Like I said, I've all walks of life, some, you know, 10 years older than me, some 20, 30 years older than me, which is awesome. So I've learned a lot from them. And I think for me, it just keeps me fresh at the same time. So I'm actually still teaching right now over at York University, which is a big school over here in Toronto. So it's actually kind of a similar program. So it's part of their continuing education program. And it is essentially like a portfolio course. It's a little bit heavy on the development side. So it's actually a full stack development bootcamp, but I'm teaching something called web UI fundamentals and frameworks. So it's a lot of fundamental development in terms of front end. So a lot of HTML, CSS, JavaScript, as well as some UI UX basics. And then we dive into a little bit more technical frameworks. So we're actually playing around with React currently. So I definitely can't get away from teaching, and I don't plan on stopping it, whether I do it full time or just kind of on the back burner. It's something that definitely always interests me.
Will you ever put out a course to how to make a fun cursor, like on your website?
I have thought of that so many times, and I'd love to just find that little niche of, you know, what I can kind of teach. You know, maybe this is my big break of just, you know, hearing my voice for the first time on a podcast. Maybe I could picture people describing.
We got millions of listeners, so you're lucky. For those who are listening, check out leocaligero.com if you want to play around with the cursor. I'm curious though, for you're teaching at York University. Is it all online right now? It's all like remote, and like how?
Yeah, great question. So it's just a part-time thing. So it's actually every other Saturday, and they run the course twice a year. So I have a term in between to kind of regroup and catch up on a few like concepts and update things. So when I first got approached to teach the course, and actually one of the reasons is just because I'm York alumni, so my name kind of stuck out in the database, which is great.
Oh, nice.
And you know, things kind of you know, went a little bit down with Red and like up with this, so it kind of worked out perfectly. But the course was to be taught in person, which is something I'm far more familiar with and actually way more comfortable with. But when I landed it, it was around the middle of March where things kind of started going south, at least in Toronto. So, you know, my boss called me and was like, listen, whether we can go back or not, we're not going to. So we're going to have to conduct this fully online. It's a little bit of an experiment on your end. You know, do what you feel comfortable. So it was a big pivot for me. Luckily, I'm a big fan of, you know, podcasts and just like a lot of YouTube and Twitch streamers. So I had the computer set up more or less okay. I just had to kind of pivot on the tools that I use. So definitely not a paid ad here, but I was using Miro a lot, for example, for a little bit of a whiteboard. I mean, if Miro's listening and they want to get on board, reach out to Josh at the Collab Collective. Big ups to Zoom. They kind of made it happen, which was great. All the tools really helped for sure. I mean, this day and age, I don't think there's really an excuse. You know, we could really, I think the world has proven that we can do this. Mm-hmm. Maybe some burnout in the long run for how long we do this, but, you know, undeniably, we definitely can.
Mm.
What would you say that you're not just your title, but to sum up everything that you do as an instructor, as a digital instructor, as someone who is a developer, a designer, everything under the sun, where do you see all this going? I know it's a huge question.
Great question.
And you're almost predicting the future.
Great question that I've been actually thinking about quite a bit. You know, I think it's a really hard question for a lot of people. Like, you know, where do you see yourself in a couple of years? You know, hopefully not in another pandemic. So I think that's a tough one to answer these days. But what really resonates with me is some of these larger companies that can afford to have this role under their belt, which is a creative technologist or design technologist. It's something that I see in some of the big great companies. I definitely don't like to support Mr. Bezos, but over at Amazon, it's something that they hire for. Over at Shopify, it's something that they hire for. And over at Facebook, for example, it's something they also hire for. And I think it really describes the intersection perfectly. You know, it's applying almost design thinking methodologies to technological perspectives, but also considering, you know, everything in between, like the like performance and marketing and advertising, as well as just like the human side of things. Like, you know, how are people going to use this? Why are people going to use this? Who are our users from both perspectives? It's a really tough one. But for me, I think it sums up my experience really well. I'd love to just tack on like creative technologist and educator to that title, just because it's something I've done and I want to continue to do. But, you know, I really tell my students, you know, embrace your experience, embrace your past. I've had students that come from all sorts of different backgrounds, and I often, you know, they're often kind of, I don't want to say ashamed, but in some cases they try to hide it. And I was like, why are you hiding it? Like, I think that builds character that maybe would stick out from one person to the next because of that experience. And that's a big reason why I'm such an advocate for side hustles or having this like eclectic background. And I think it makes people stick out. And there's soft skills that you can apply to different industries and different perspectives. And I think it's those people who really, really stick out. Because, you know, it's great that you have that decade-long background in programming, but it's that ex-student I had who actually was a cake decorator who was able to see the much bigger picture from start to finish because she's been in those situations, you know, time and time again.
So that's interesting, because I think those, you know, that wide variety of background, it makes for a good, like, school or like a boot camp. But I think in my experience, just like applying for jobs and what companies are looking for, maybe Agnes, you can kind of put your, yeah, I'd love to get your
HR hat on.
Yeah, like, but it seems like that it on paper it looks nice, the diversity, but what they're actually just looking for is just, you know, a niche experience on a particular skill set or an area, and that's what they're hiring. But yeah, I'm curious to hear what you guys think about that.
I think this is such a cliche answer to start off with, but I think it all depends. I think it depends on the exact opportunity and company and hiring manager. Only because, and I was just chatting to my friend about this the other day, which is every company will have a slightly different role and a slightly different capacity when it comes to a generalist and a specialist. And so I think that within one of the reasons, and again, Leo, I'm going to toot your horn here. One of the reasons why Leo, as a multidiscipline individual, stood out to a place like Red is because Red was at a capacity. Red was an employer and at a stage for which we needed people to have multiple different hats and to not be afraid of the multiple different hats. Mm. And I think that's one of the reasons why, I mean, like straight shot to the very beginning of this podcast, why Leo stood out to me as an applicant was he didn't hide anything. It was very much on his application that it's like he had a B.Ed and he taught in London. And even in our phone interview, I remember, Leo, you were talking about some of the experiences that you had as a teacher in the UK. And so in that situation, for when me being the hiring manager going, okay, well, I need someone who knows how to teach, who knows dev, who knows obviously design, because it was mostly design specific. That was just like a straight like shoo-in rather than putting the pieces together and kind of adding to the bucket. But if we're talking about a big company where things are very formal, and not to say that bureaucracy is a bad thing, I think, again, really much depends on the structure and the team. But for when you have a pure specialist, then yes, of course. And you do need someone who is interested and or actively looking to be one specific thing. But mm-hmm. I think that in the way that where technology is going and how companies are hiring, again, it depends on every opportunity and they're all kind of different. But it almost, because of how a lot of professions kind of intermingle, where, you know, the marketer needs to work with the developer and needs to work with the designer, that having a bit of that best of both worlds does actually make sense in the future, or actually just now, just because when it comes to team collaboration and team meetings and making sure that, you know, a sprint goes smoothly because everyone's talking the same language. I would almost rather always hire generalists, to be honest.
Hmm.
You guys are both having your thinking faces on.
Oh, I think that's a great point. And I think you're right. Like, it really does depend, but I think it's also up to the individual to kind of do their research and see if they would be appreciated in those certain environments. Mm-hmm. And if they would be like, if their experience would be fostered in those very specific companies who really do appreciate it. Because, you know, like Agnes said, there's some huge companies out there that they need those specialists, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, they need that React dev or that person that's strictly on UX writing, for example, which is awesome. But, you know, especially for some of our students, especially coming out of Red, I think it was really important to just have a little bit of generalizations under their belt, or just having a little bit of multidisciplinary experience, because, you know, employers know that they're coming out of these programs likely because they didn't necessarily know what they wanted to do, or they just wanted to like figure things out kind of as they go. And I think when they consider that, there's a lot more opportunity and it's a lot more open-ended for them to kind of morph into that, let's say, specialist in a few years, for example, and really find their niche, or, you know, be that generalist and be proud of it, which is something that I am, for example. And it really depends who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to, you know, a really tech heavy company, I'll definitely play the development card. If I'm talking to a startup, I'll definitely make sure I mention that I do this, this, and this, and like have like four or five side hustles going on. If I'm talking to like Amazon, I might be like, you know, this is what I do and this is all I do, because I know that's what you want. So I think it really depends, and a little bit of research goes a long way.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I do want to get your guys' thoughts on, because I've been hearing people who came out of like 4-year degree design programs just bash on fresh bootcamp grads, saying like, you know, that's not real education. You can only get so much out of, you know, a 3-month program or whatnot. I mean, obviously you guys have seen some success stories come out of Red. I'm curious if you guys can share your thoughts on that.
I can start with that one, just because I was a little bit closer to the students. So I was always there to kind of defend them when, you know, someone did bring up that, I want to say, kind of controversial topic. And in a lot of cases, I do agree. But it really depends on the point in your life of when you can afford to do such things. Not everyone can afford that four-year degree. Not everyone can afford the time, the money, the commitment in general. And that's why I think programs like RED exist. They're that small in between where, you know, we can kind of bring you in and churn that butter and spit you out. And we're able to do so confidently because of our industry experience and because we're able to pivot so quickly and be like, students would come back to us, especially a lot of alumni, and be like, hey, we're learning this, this, and this. Maybe you should squeeze it into the program. We were able to. So I see that question a lot, especially on Twitter, and I'm usually one of the first ones to respond.
Yeah.
And I'm a big advocate for both, to be honest. Like I do have a traditional like 4-year degree, and I think that was an invaluable experience for me, but it was an invaluable experience for me at that time. And I don't think everyone can afford that. So both the time and the money and the financial commitment, it's just big. But for me, I think just to kind of stick up for my students, I think that bootcamp experience is just a little bit closer to reality in terms of a workplace environment. And just having those set kind of, you know, disciplines and having those set guidelines and deadlines and kind of getting rid of that theory and filler, which is great. And I absolutely would agree that, you know, you can learn it on your own time and you can brush up when you can or squeeze it in when possible. I think it's a tangible skills that I want to say like any bootcamp kind of produces is what's really the most valuable and what students really like come to these programs for. It's amazing to go to the 4-year degree, but in a lot of cases I find those students coming out of those programs aren't necessarily equipped for the workforce. They might not know what, you know, what software they're using or more tangible kind of like get it done attitude. And they're a little bit more equipped for a lot of the critical thinking skills, but not necessarily the tangible kind of soft work skills, which a lot of employers, you know, don't have time to teach necessarily.
Yeah, I 100% agree. From the perspective of like HR and hiring manager, I have hired both CS grads and bootcamp people. And I think that when it really comes down to it, of course, a piece of paper, a piece of certificate, like, yes, that matters in the sense of like, oh, you went to Harvard versus I'm not going to name a negative other school. But I think that even for myself to pull this out of technology and to share my own personal experiences, I have an arts degree from UBC, a 4-year degree. And my HR certificate or my HR diploma rather is a short little program that I did after through a continuing studies program. And yet I've had a like pretty solid career in HR. And so to put this back into the tech industry is I've hired both bootcamp and self-taught, actually, one of the best developers I've hired for many, many years ago was self-taught. He taught himself how to code at the age of 12 in his parents' basement. And he doesn't really have any formal certificates, to be honest. But yet when it came down to, when it came down to QAing, he was like the only person at that specific company that could find the bug and fix it the fastest, in a sense. And so I get why there are so many esteemed, established careers, schools, everything. Like even when it comes down to buying groceries, like why do we roll our eyes at store brand and we go for the name brand, right? I think there's a reason why all these labels exist. But I think that as much as completing a 4-year degree is impressive from the dedication of time, I know just as many people who are equally talented, if not quote unquote smarter, for when they have had a more untraditional school. And I almost want to say, and I might be throwing shade here, is that I know a few people that went to their undergrad and finished it just to appease their parents. And they just did it. And just because like there's a, I think really what we're talking about is just the passion behind exactly what you're doing, which is a whole other topic when it comes to just what people do in their daily lives. But I get why 4 years or even like master programs, why they are so significant, but it really, I don't know if it's truly necessary.
Hmm. Gotcha. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know we are kind of wrapping up on our time. So Leo, I was wondering if there's anything you'd like to like
share,
tell us where you're at and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you a quick follow-up. I mean, so actually, I took the last almost 8 months kind of to myself. And don't get me wrong, I was on the job hunt, but I wasn't necessarily starving by any means. And I really wanted to look for a great fit. So for me, just to give everyone a little heads up of what I'm doing now, is like I said, I'm working over at Blue Cross. But what I was really trying to do over the last 8 months was kind of figure out where I wanted to be and what intersection I wanted to kind of find myself in. So, just talking about Red, I got that experience, which was, you know, that awesome kind of startup experience with a go-go kind of attitude. But I really wanted to contrast that with something a little bit more strict. So over at Blue Cross, a little bit more corporate, it's a super Canadian, everything's bilingual over there. And we can't even like cross a T without checking with the French copywriter to make sure it's going to be okay. But I think that's kind of what I needed. So like I said, I'm still teaching on the side, which is something I don't plan to stop doing. But it was kind of my time to go back into the world of UX and hopefully stay there for a bit. And maybe in the long run, get back into a full-time teaching role so I could just kind of come back full force with, new skills, new ideas, and new kind of tangible things that I can embark on, hopefully another kind of breed of designers or developers and kind of everything in between.
Fantastic. You should start your own Leo School of Design.
Yeah, that's great. I'll sign up. I'm on board.
Cool. Well, Leo, it's so nice to catch up with you. I know we've chatted here and there on WhatsApp over the last 8 months, but you didn't note your agency name, which I think is I really like the name of it. So you're gonna share it or
Yeah, I can follow up with the end. So I'm just a really I want to say proactive person. And, you know, when one door closes, another one instantly kind of opens for me. And if I can't find that door, I'll take the elevator or the stairs or whatever it may be. That's just kind of the type of person I am. So, when Red was kind of fizzing out, I just figured, you know, what else can I do to kind of promote myself, maybe help out some of my friends and keep things going. So right near the end of Red, I started something called NYAA, which stands for Not Your Average Agency. It's actually not your average.agency if anyone wants to check it out. And the reason why I kind of started that is because I wanted to keep a little bit of a collective of some of the great friends that I made along the way. Mm-hmm. And we actually provide freelance design, development, and marketing services and kind of everything in between for small to medium sized projects, a lot of local and small businesses, which is really what I'm hoping to kind of help, especially those really, really affected by the pandemic and things like that. But the reason why I called it that is because it really isn't your average. It's a little bit of a collective of everyone with different walks of life and different experiences. I know that's something I said a couple times throughout this podcast, but that's really what sticks out for me. I love those specialists and I love working with them. Don't get me wrong, but it's those generalists with that go get them kind of side hustle attitude that I really vibe with. And that's kind of everyone that was at Red. And I think that's why we've all kind of stuck together so well. And I think just having that shared experience was that kind of amazing glue that, you know, kept us strong right near the end.
Cool. Thanks, Leo.
Awesome way to end it off. So guys, if you want to check it out, your friendly neighborhood creative agency, check out notyouraverage.agency. Great. I hope you guys enjoy. If you have any questions or want to reach out to Agnes or Leo, I'll leave all their contact information in the podcast description. So have a wonderful day and I'll see you guys in the next one. Bye.